This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Tess Vigeland. Last week, we began a series of conversations about the role religion plays in some families' financial decisions. We started with an exploration of how Muslims view money management. Today, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I'm set, I think. Silverware I do not have.
Earlier this year, on a trip to Park City, Utah, I sat down to dinner with several members of the Mormon Church. Greg Robinson is a vice president and wealth advisor with Wells Fargo. He's also a nephew of Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney. His wife, Robin, is an author and educator. Greg Bishop, yes, we have two Gregs here, serves as general counsel for a home automation company in Salt Lake City. His wife, Christy, is a massage therapist. And finally, a familiar voice on this program, financial advisor and napkin artist Carl Richards of Buckingham Asset Management. I started by asking the group where Mormonism fits into how they approach money.
Greg Robinson speaking. My faith informs the way I think about money completely. We're encouraged by our faith and by the teachings of our faith regarding provident living, as we describe it, is that we should live within our means, that we should be paying a full tithing, recognize that all of our material well-being as well as our spiritual well-being comes from God. And that we should be, you know, putting first things first and thinking much more about family and providing for our family and our children and enabling good things to happen in the world as opposed to just enriching ourselves.
You said the word provident living?
Provident living. Mm-hmm.
It's just a term that's used to describe wise, careful choices, planning for the future, thinking about resources, thinking carefully about the things that you do with what you've been blessed with.
That was Robin?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Greg. So Mormons or Latter-day Saints are often known for their practice of keeping food in reserve and those kinds of things. That's part of the provident living that we're talking about. So having money set aside, having food set aside, having clothing and gasoline or whatever you might need for a rainy day.
Sounds like debt is really something that is antithetical to that.
Yes, but also the church as an entity recognizes that there are certain situations where debt is a useful tool, but it's to be used with caution. Mm. For example, education, buying a home, you know, large purchases. But generally speaking, it's wise to avoid it. Of course, because this is Robin, by the way. You get into debt and you no longer are free to have the range of choices that you would have had were you not in debt. You know, it limits your ability to act independently because if you owe someone, you are, in a sense, their slave to a certain degree because you have to make that monthly payment or whatever. So it limits your options.
This is Greg Bishop. I think Robin's right. I think the church counsels us to be prudent, to be careful, not to overspend, not to get in debt. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with a sense of freedom. So whether you're talking about religious freedom or in this case financial freedom, that's a big thing for us as members of the church.
That sounds very common, I would think, though, to many, if not most, faiths. Is there anything within the Mormon faith that you think is in some way different, a teaching, an emphasis that you would not necessarily see in Catholicism or Buddhism or what have you?
This is Robin again. I think that phrase, provident living, is somewhat singular because that planning for the future, there is a heavy emphasis on that. Not just to use your resources wisely, not just to be careful with money, because I think that is pretty universal, but I think to actively plan for a rainy day, to set food and fuel resources aside. And, you know, some people see that as hoarding, but I see it as very freeing because if you have those resources set aside when times are scarce, then the limited resources are then available for others. You don't have to tap into that.
Well, then is it fair in a very generalized way to say that members of the Mormon faith are probably better savers?
We want to be.
We should be.
We should be.
This is Christy. I know all churches serve, but I think a lot of members of the Mormon church, we are taught that you help others, whether it be financially, whether it physically, in whatever form that you can. You go and you serve other people. And if you yourself are not in a good place, you're not able to go help other people. So for me, that's a huge part of being financially responsible. So you're in a good spot yourself, so you can reach out and help others.
And this is Carl. I think that the church is very careful to look for ways to help sort of that old saying of giving a hand up instead of a hand out. And I think it's really interesting to think about, like, look, the first line of defense is personal, and then who in your family could help you? You know, when you need help and you go to like a local, what we refer to as a bishop, a local leader, almost universally the first question is there anybody in your family that can help? Once we've exhausted the resources of the family, then maybe the church can help. But it's this idea of being independent.
But in that case, what about those who do not have those resources and don't have the ability to save for the rainy day or to save to help others? What does the church say about them?
I think there's two answers to that question.
This is Robin.
First of all, we're encouraged to work, to engage in meaningful labor. Productivity is important just for the sense of self-esteem and the rewards that that brings. But within that context, we are encouraged to pay a 10% tithe, no matter how small our income is. And of course, there's a spiritual, not just spiritual, but there is a spiritual sort of guarantee that you obtain from that, where if you are obedient, then you receive a blessing. And so even if you don't make a lot of money, if you are donating that 10%, which is what the Lord has asked of us, then you have the Lord's promise that he will help you when times are difficult. And the second part is that the church organized what's called the Perpetual Education Fund. Basically, what it is that people in the church who have means donate to this fund, and it is specifically intended to help those who don't have as much money to obtain an education so that they can rise in whatever their circumstances are so that they can improve and better themselves, their lives, their families.
And then there's a payback mechanism, right? If I
yes.
understand it right. So that after you get your education and now you're earning more money than you would have been uneducated, then you pay back the loan that came from the fund to begin with, and it just keeps going forward.
And that was Greg Bishop.
Yeah, that was Greg Bishop, Ms. Greg Robinson. So there's a huge emphasis in the church on education. That's one of the things that we haven't mentioned, but that's connected to this financial independence, is that we're encouraged to seek as much education as we can get, because we recognize that as you are more and more educated, then your income earning potential increases, your independence and self-reliance increases. And so for those who wouldn't be able to seek that education without financial assistance, the church has that fund.
I want to pick up on something that Robin said, which is, I think you used the phrase spiritual guarantee that you obtain from tithing. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about tithing a little bit because it's been in the news because of our current presidential candidate. And certainly other faiths have tithing.
Yeah.
But how does that fit into the family budget and into how you plan your spending and saving? Because 10% is not insignificant.
This is Greg Bishop. For me, it's a paradigm, right? So if you start from the position that all of this that I earn is mine, then you say to yourself, wow, 10%, that's a lot that I'm giving away. But if your paradigm is everything that I have comes from God, so I earned it, yes, but the abilities that I have, my education, my ability to do labor or whatever it is, the way that you earn your money, if that all comes from God because he allows you to live and breathe and exist, then 10% back is just the piece that he wants back of stuff that was his to begin with.
And this is Greg Robinson. And there are other ways that you can give to the church, such as fast offerings. So once a month, we fast for 24 hours. And we are encouraged to take the money that we would have spent on that food and we give it to the poor. So the welfare assistance to the poor, the humanitarian aid, that does not come from tithing funds. Tithing funds go to building chapels, churches, temples, running the church universities, running the church. So that's what we give in addition to the 10%. And we're encouraged to pay a generous fast offering.
And most active members, this is Robin, I think most active members do. They give the tithing and they give the additional. It's just common practice.
This is Carl. And I think this brings up another issue, this idea of give and you are blessed. Mm-hmm. There's a more complex piece of this conversation, which is we don't really know. It's not a you give and you're automatically blessed. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you can see an absolute direct correlation. And there's plenty of stories in my own life, and I'm sure we all have stories like that. But I think there is a tendency sometimes culturally for us to get stuck in that trap of using money as a comparison, and maybe that there's some correlation to our own personal righteousness or worthiness. And I think we have to be very careful. In fact, I know we have to be very careful there. It's particularly a sort of judgment of, you know, when somebody's going through tough financial situation, does that necessarily mean they did something wrong on the other end? No, mm-hmm. we don't know how all that works out.
Well, and if they're in that tough financial situation, what if they can't tithe?
That's a slightly different question. I don't know that you get in a situation where you can't tithe, right? I mean, if you're earning an income and, you know, you pay your tithing. Many of us have been in a situation where we didn't know where the money was going to come to pay for a bill 5 days later if we wrote that check, and it worked out.
But certainly there are people for whom that has not worked out.
Absolutely. The wonderful thing I think about the Mormon church is none of us in this room and most of us in the church aren't in a position to be placing judgment on anybody else's situation. We're there to love and help and encourage.
This is Greg Robinson. The opportunity to tithe, though, is for everyone. So even for little children, I mean, if they get $10 for their birthday, they can pay a dollar of tithing to God. So that the idea of giving tithing is not related at all to the amount. It's much more this recognition, this paradigm of everything I have comes from God, and he's going to watch out for me, and he's going to make sure that we're taken care of one way or another.
Hmm. Carl, again, and being taken care of doesn't necessarily mean financially. I mean, there are plenty of examples of people who did everything right and things didn't work out financially, you know, but being taken care of means it's the same with the term rich, right? What does that word mean, mm-hmm. right? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean a bunch of money. And I think paying tithing is also not necessarily about getting something back, right? That's not, we're not doing that. I hesitate to even use the word investment.
No, it's an expression of faith.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what you do.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you don't pay tithing because you have money. You pay tithing because you have faith. So it's just as hard for somebody who's poor to pay 10% as it is for somebody who's rich to pay that big dollar value. It sounds a little... No, I really think it is. I mean, when you get to some very large numbers, you're like, wow, that's, you know, I could do some other things with this. It's an expression of faith either way. And even the poorest can exercise their faith by paying tithing.
Carl brought up the question of wealth and definitions thereof are, they'll run the gamut, mm-hmm. you know, depending who you're talking to. But I wonder, is there anything specific in the Book of Mormon that talks about wealth?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what it means to be rich, what the definition of that?
Mostly from my perspective, this is Robin, from my perspective, the Book of Mormon is cautionary against, it's not the money that's bad, but it's having your heart dwelling on the money.
Set.
It's the things that money can buy. It's the idols. It's what Isaiah talks about, you know, the false idols. The Book of Mormon is very much in that exact vein. Same thing. Don't set your heart upon the things of this world. It's service, it's charity, it's faith, it's those important intangibles. And so the money is just a means to live on this earth, to exist, and to enable you to achieve the things that are of most eternal significance. The money is secondary.
And yet at the same time, you know, based on your description earlier, part of what you try to do on a daily basis is have some sort of accumulation that will keep you safe and then also allow you to bolster others if you need to. So on one hand, it seems that there's this need to accumulate. And on the other hand, perhaps then, you know, the Book of Mormon is telling you, but don't let that enter your head.
Yeah.
Don't let it canker your soul.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if your God becomes money, then you've really lost the important thing, right? So, yeah, it's important to be self-reliant, take care of your family, your extended family. But if at the end of all of that, your money and your possessions take your full attention, then you've missed the point of why you're here to begin with. It's not about collecting money. It's about getting yourself to be more like God and returning to him in that better condition. It's like Steve Covey said, you know, people spend their whole life climbing up the ladder only to realize it's leaning against the wrong wall, right? So you spend all that time trying to climb the ladder of success. It's rare somebody on their deathbed says, gee, I wish I would have spent, you know, I would have had more money in my bank account. I wish I would have spent more time at the office. Which goes back to sort of the core Mormon value, family first. So
all of those monetary things are great, but it's all about love and service and family, really.
Does God want you to be rich?
Yeah, I don't think that we're pro-money or anti-money. Either one. I don't think that's really part of the equation. It's not like we're anti-rich or anti-poverty. It's just that money is a useful tool. And it's to enable other things that are way more important than money.
And this is Carl. I think that's one of the challenge of our time, at least among certain communities, is can we figure out how to make it just a useful tool and nothing more?
You can't get your self-worth from money.
That's Greg Bishop.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you have to be the kind of person that God wants you to be, independent of whether you're poor or rich, because money's a false way of measuring yourself. You can have a lot of money, and just like that, it can be gone. And that doesn't mean you're a worse person because you lost your money, and it doesn't mean you're a better person because you got your money, right? It's all about the kind of person that you're supposed to be and focusing on sort of the core values of the church. It's not about collecting stuff.
Greg Robinson, and I think the balance that we need to try and find as a nation, and certainly that we're encouraged to try and find within our own faith in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is it stems from discipline. You know, the word disciple, to be a disciple of Christ, is to be disciplined in the way we live. And so whether we have a little or a lot financially, it's you're living in the same patterns and in the same way.
I do have one additional thought in answer specifically to your question. This is Robin again. And that is that I don't know, I've been sitting here thinking about this, I don't know that there's anything unique to the Latter-day Saint faith about money per se, a unique teaching. But I do think that when you're not in debt, you do feel freer. And when you don't have the complications of overspending or focusing on greed or the pride that material things can bring you, that simplifies your life and clarifies your vision. So I think those kinds of things are very helpful, not just for the Latter-day Saints, but for people of all faiths.
Robin and Greg Robinson, Greg and Christy Bishop and Carl Richards, thank you all for talking with us about this.
Thank you.
You're awesome. Thank you.
And in a couple of weeks, we'll continue our discussions of money teachings, and we'll be reviewing the Jewish and Catholic faiths. So join us for that. And before we leave the subject, a correction, thanks to some sharp-eared listeners last week. I introduced this segment by asking whether money is the root of all evil. Well, the correct quote from 1 Timothy 6:10 reads, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil." Back to Sunday school for me.